Hi, it's Tony. On today's show, we'll talk to Steve Sands about the Arnold Palmer Invitational. We'll also chat with Chuck Culpepper about Caitlin Clark and her record-breaking night earlier this week. But first, as always, commerce.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And I'll get you out of here on this. Where is the Aloha Tower calendar? You've had it for so many years. Where is it?
It is in the same place it has been. I will be more than happy to place it in a package that will be sent directly to you, and you can fire it for the next 4 or 5 years.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
So just a bunch of small little things here to get to. I got an email the other day from Jared Burley in Muncie, Pennsylvania. He said, I thought Mr. Tony would enjoy seeing this picture from the Medved Farm in Orson, Pennsylvania. Also wanted to mention that my parents got me named from the character Jared Bartley on the TV show The Big Valley. Tell Dave Reynolds he can eat it. I will never, ever not know what the Medved Farm looks like. I mean, it was on my way to Camp Kiyuma.
Yeah, it's burned in your memory.
First turn, when you made the right-hand turn past Doyle's General Store to get the one-mile road to go to camp, the Medved Farm was on the left, and all the cows lined up. It was a dairy farm, and the image of it to me is burned in my mind, and that's snow covered in this particular photograph. But thank you so much, Jared, for that.
Can I ask you a question about cows?
Yeah, I don't know much about cows.
Well, this is no specific knowledge.
You want to call Buster? I mean, we can call Buster.
But when you pass a farm, like a dairy farm, and there's a ton of cows out there, will you actively speak to the cows as you pass by, like, hey, cows?
Everybody at the camp would scream, Skubash. And this was a tradition, and I don't know what that means.
I've never heard that.
But when the cows were lined up like that.
Skubash.
Skubash, like that. And I just, I've done that. I don't pass a lot of cows lately. I don't live in rural America, so I don't pass a lot of cows. Sometimes on the drive to and from the beach,
you'll see
a cow or two, but I don't yell out the window. I feel that's impolite, and also that seems like a Pennsylvania thing and not a Delaware thing or a Maryland thing.
Another camp question.
I had a couple of things to say.
Do you ever visit camp out of season? I mean, to see the farm with snow on it. Did you ever visit camp when it was the winter, snow-covered, see the bunks under snow?
No. The closest I got would be like a May or in an October. No, but never way out of season. Never when the weather would be such that it would be memorable because of snow. I had not done that. That's, again, little things. I was going to talk about this the other day, and I'm going to talk about it now. Ed Cooley is the coach. Georgetown lost again last night. Georgetown lost to Providence, which is the school that Ed Cooley left to go to Georgetown. Georgetown is 9-27 this year, or 9-22 this year, or 9-21 this year. It's something like that. It's no good. It's 9-and. And they're 2-17 in the Big East. And the only reason they're 2 is because they had DePaul a couple of times. They're terrible. They're every bit as terrible, Georgetown, this year, as they were with Patrick Ewing.
Yeah.
When they were terrible.
Yeah.
Their record in the Big East the last 3 years is like 4-54. It's awful.
Yeah.
It's simply awful. And Ed Cooley was asked the other day, he talked about defensive problems. How do you solve your defensive problems? He said, recruiting. Well, that's a Rick Pitino answer. That's Rick Pitino saying, you know, these guys stink. Well, you recruited them. You kept them on the team. You didn't replace them. You can't say that. That's how Pitino got in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And Cooley should be in a lot of trouble. And Cooley does the same thing, you know, that Thompson used to do. He doesn't make players available after the games. Thompson won national championships. Okay? He wasn't 4-54 in the Big East.
No.
He might have been 54-4 at one point.
Yeah,
you're not John Thompson.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people that would say after this first year, and it's only 1 year, and you got to give a guy a chance. But a lot of people would say, maybe we made the wrong call on Ed Cooley.
Feels like it.
And at some point, people at Georgetown are going to say, if this is what it's going to be, why are we even playing? Why don't we go to the Patriot League?
Yeah.
Why don't we go somewhere else? Why don't we stop this? Because it's a disaster. And they don't get anybody go to their games.
No.
Anyway, that's my small thing on Ed Cooley, who I liked a lot at Providence, but you're thinking it's a recruiting.
Well, it's unreasonable to expect someone to coach and recruit for only $6 million.
That's a lot. He makes a lot of money. That's just a Pitino answer to me, right? I mean, that was to me. All right, other things. Let's talk about Binghamton for a second. Binghamton won last night. They beat UMBC at UMBC. I wasn't aware. I was aware there was a game. But if you said, did you watch it? For me to watch it, I'm sure it was on something like ESPN 80 right. That you get on your computer, and I don't have a computer. And I know, I mean, I didn't watch it, but now we are the fifth seed in the tournament, the America East tournament. And did we get mail from people from
you did get Vermont a package
or something?
Oh,
from the
I got
conference.
A package?
From the conference.
Okay, that's
well, that's
nice.
Lovely.
But
we did
are
get an email
complaining
from
complaining in Vermont.
Well, somebody was saying you talk a lot about the America East, but you never sing the praises of Vermont and the whatever the coach's name, I guess, has won a ton. Obviously,
the coaches before him won a ton. Also,
yeah,
they go to the tournament every year. They don't need the praise.
They're a great program. They're the best program in the America East.
Yes,
if you beat them ever, that's an accomplishment. The Catamounts are really good. And they have my utmost respect. I don't hate them like I hate Stony Brook or Albany. No, because they're not in the state system.
Yeah.
No, I admire them. Just can't beat them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, step off. Is that what the phrase is?
Step down? Step off, sure.
Yeah, leave me alone on this. I had friends who went. Mark Oland went to Vermont. Richie Cabot went to Vermont. Gene Weiss went to Vermont. I know people that went to Vermont. Vermont's a fine school.
Yeah, it is a fine school.
It's a fine school. So, I mean, but do I want to beat Vermont? Yeah. Can we? No.
Yeah.
Maybe we've beaten them once or twice in 12 years, 15 years. I don't know.
I would say that if the Bearcats are able to get to play Vermont and to beat them, that would be a banner year.
But I will just say this. If we get the opportunity, I'd love to play Vermont. They're the best.
Yeah.
You always want to beat the best. You have the chance.
Yeah.
You want to beat the best. You don't often beat the best.
But that was a nice win last night.
That's good.
Baguette's down by 4 at the half and win by 1.
So I have this other thing to talk about, however, briefly. Yesterday on the PTI show, one of the questions was about Shohei Ohtani. And it was, it's an exhibition game that he's playing against the Angels tonight. Is any part of you interested in watching this? And I said, is any part of me interested in watching it? No, all of me is interested in watching it. Because Shohei Ohtani, in my lifetime, with Shohei Ohtani, whatever, how many years, 4 or 5 years that he's been in the league, he's a rumor to me. He played on a lousy team. Their games were never televised. And if they were televised, they would have been televised starting at 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night in the East, and I wasn't going to watch them. So I've seen highlights of Shohei Ohtani. I've never seen a full at bat. So I wanted to see a full at bat, and I said this. I said, I don't care that it's an exhibition game. I don't care if it's a softball game. I would love to see it. I don't get MLB Network, so I couldn't see it, which angered me. Yeah. But that's not even the point. Because Wilbon goes on and says it's junk, you know, and it's not a real game, and there's no point in seeing it, and I'm going to watch college basketball, or it's a ball night. I'm going to watch the NBA. Okay, That's fine if you want to say that. But just for the record, so people know this, last year, last summer, all Michael Wilbon could talk about was watching Victor Wembanyama in summer league, in exhibition basketball, in games that don't count at all. And that's what he was driven to watch. Victor Wembanyama in meaningless games. And then he attacked. I should have thought of this yesterday, and I didn't. I thought of it at 3 o'clock in the morning. And then he attacks me for wanting to watch Shohei Ohtani in what I understand is a meaningless at bat.
Yeah.
I understand it, but it would have given me pleasure. You know, double standard there drove me crazy from 3 to 3:15 in the morning. It did.
Well, he was very definitive and sort of putting everything down. He's like, it's junk. Call me when it's April. None of these games matter. And he was saying he was going to watch the A-Sun tournament with Lipscomb in like Liberty or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then why did you, what was the big deal about Victor Wembanyama? Yeah.
Well, that's different.
I don't need to defend Mike's hocus pocus arguments here, but to be fair, there's something about the calendar where if it's mid-March, everyone's eyes are on college basketball because you're trying to figure out a tournament, particularly when you have no front-runner team. So I understand getting swept up in college basketball now, and the baseball season does allow a lull in the summer where you can start to wonder about a basketball superstar.
Just fills my heart with tears that my son would go against me like that. I got one other letter. I think I told people about this, that the America East has a new logo. And it is based on the famous highway sign of the Highway of Dreams, I-95, which the immigrants took in the 1800s when they landed in New York. They got on I-95, they went north to Boston, and they went south to Florida. Maybe they didn't, but I've talked about this. I've talked about my part in trying to influence the America East, where champions rise, trying to influence the America East to this particular logo, my theory being that all of the states in the America East tournament are, you know, connected by I-95. I got this letter the other day with a shirt and a sticker, an America East sticker that I have put on display in the PTI show. Tony, February 21st, 2024 is a big day for the America East Conference, home to your beloved Binghamton Bearcats, as we launch our new brand identity. I wanted to personally thank you for sharing your perspective with President Stenger and the team from Legend Labs. They were the people who, you know, consultants on this.
Oh, sure.
Your thoughts helped us frame our thoughts around what could be a bold, distinct look that ties the league together. Best of luck to you on PTI. I always like tuning in and seeing the Bearcat hat in the background. Hope you enjoy this small token of our appreciation. Brad Walker, Commissioner, America East Conference. And he sent me a shirt. And I thought that was really nice.
That is really nice.
I held it up the other day on the show. Wilbon has still not commented on the I-95 portion.
No, of course not.
Even though he hates I-95 and everything. Wilbon's position on I-95 is, I love New York. I hate I-95. It's on I-95.
It's right in the middle.
It's on it. Yeah. It's on it. You know, come on now. It's like Boston's on it. You know, New York is on it.
Philadelphia.
Baltimore is on it. Philadelphia is on it. Washington is on it.
Yeah.
You know, go further south. Atlanta's not on it.
Keep going. But, Don't stop.
Go to Miami.
Miami.
Miami's on it.
Yeah. Bangor.
Is Bangor on it? I guess it is.
I don't know if it's directly on it.
I've never been to Maine.
Yeah.
I've gone through this. All right. So that's the open. Who's with us? Is it Sands first or
Sanzi.
Is it Chuck Culpepper first?
Yes,
Sanzi. When we return, he's at the Bay Hill, right, Michael? He's at Bay Hill?
Yes.
I assume so. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Natalie Gelman. This is a song called Most the While. And I know it's going to be good, though I haven't heard it, because it's sent to us by Michael Granberry, who writes, Natalie Gelman grew up in Greenwich Village and began busking as a teenager in the subway tunnels in New York City. Natalie once said she was made in New York City and raised by subways. She now lives 3,000 miles from Greenwich Village in Ojai, California, which hasn't stopped her from pursuing her dreams, which have taken her to concert stages in the UK, Europe, and all over the US. I first met her 9 years ago when she wowed a crowd in Dallas playing lyrically written ballads inspired by her longtime muse, Joni Mitchell. Speaking of, Natalie has recorded the most beautiful cover ever of a knockout ballad about hate and injustice written by the late great Nancy Griffith titled It's a Hard Life Wherever You Go. This is Most the While. And as Jackson Brown once said, that girl can sing. Plays in Steve Sands. Sands is at the Arnold Palmer in Bay Hill. And I'm going to sound whiny. And I think maybe you'd be able to appreciate why I sound whiny. Are we going to finally have a great field in a PGA Tour event? Because the first six or seven tournaments, it's hard to say that.
Well, there is a great field here this week. There have been great fields thus far in 2024. There just haven't been great winners for the most part. It's a little convoluted as far as the stature of the winners. You know, Hideki Matsuyama's a winner. He's going to the Hall of Fame, Tony.
Oh, sure.
Wyndham Clark's a major champion. Nick Taylor's won multiple times. Chris Kirk's won multiple times. There are always some outliers. There's always a Grayson Murray making a long putt in a playoff at the Sony Open in Hawaii. There's a Jake Knapp. There's a Nick Dunlap. By the way, Nick Dunlap, the amateur, he had a field at the American Express in California that week. Patrick Cantlay was there. Scotty Scheffler was there. Justin Thomas was there. Sam Burns was there. Xander Schauffele was there. There have been great fields. There just haven't been, you know, that monster great winner yet, aside from Hideki Matsuyama.
Well, yeah, because a tournament was won by a guy from France who I'd never heard of, an amateur, as you said, which is a lovely story, the amateur. A first-time blonde musclehead, and another first-time guy on Monday, right? Another first-time guy. Right. So my questions were, have there been great fields, and where have the Americans been? You know what I mean? And those people, the Spieths, the Thomases, the Schefflers, you know, the people who are still on the PGA Tour, I haven't noticed them.
Yeah, it's been slim when it comes to big-time American stars winning thus far. Like I said, things like this happen. I'll give you an example. In the early 2000s, when Tiger and Vijay and Phil and Ernie and Retief Goosen and David Duval were the big six, you know, going crazy and winning all kinds of major championships and big-time PGA Tour events. In 2003, Tony, there were 18 first-time winners. That's in the heyday of those six players, all right? There were 18 first-time winners that season. Now, it didn't happen all in the first 9 weeks like it has in 2024, seemingly. But in the middle of all that greatness, 18 PGA Tour wins were by first-time winners. That's a lot when you're dealing with, you know, players who are snagging 4, 5, 6 wins a year like those guys were. So you have to be a little patient, and let's see if 2024 can marinate a little bit. But for sure, the star power has been missing the first couple of months on tour.
Marinate is a great word. I guess the difference between the year that you are citing and now is there was no Saudi tour in the year that you are citing. There was no competition. There was no sense, wow, if famous people aren't winning on the PGA Tour, then all the famous people must have left. You know what I'm saying? Is there any sense of that there is a competition that maybe people thought would be done by now because a deal would have been reached?
Absolutely. There's no question that if you take LIV Golf and you take PGA Tour golf and you look at the results in 2024 on the PGA Tour, one could certainly look at the LIV Tour as to why this has happened. Mm-hmm. I tend to think that this is just cyclical, Tony. I just think that sometimes You get random winners, and sometimes you get massive stars who win. And I also think golf is just starting here. Football is over. We're in that kind of Michael Wilbon NBA abyss right now. College basketball is about to really crank up, you know, for 5 weeks. So I think the golf is in that realm as well. Let's see what happens this week and next week. Great field this week at Bay Hill. Great field next week at the Players. Two back-to-back. If you don't get somebody with some horsepower winning this week or next week, I'd be surprised. And then I think that chatter will ratchet up even more as we get into, you know, the warm-up for the Masters in about 4 or 5 weeks.
So what I wonder about, and I don't know if you know this, although it is your business, but that doesn't mean you know this particular thing. Have the ratings been off in the PGA Tour events? Have they slid at all because of leaderboards where you have to struggle to know who these people are?
Yes, for sure. The golf ratings are down. And that's, again, that's a cyclical thing as well, because it's just so dependent on who's on the leaderboard. We all watch the Masters. All sports fans watch the Masters, not just golf.
No matter who's on the board.
No matter who's on the board. But
that's right.
The ratings are helped when it's a massive star on the top of that leaderboard on Saturday and Sunday. So, you know, these things kind of go back and forth. You're not about to put, you know, the Commanders on Sunday Night Football when they stink all these years.
No.
So in golf, you can't help that. That's not, you know, like, the NBA kind of is in that weird mode where it seems like ESPN and TNT have the Warriors on every night because of the star power of Steph Curry, but the Warriors aren't very good. So it's a weird deal in the NBA when it comes to that. But when it comes to golf, you can't schedule anything in golf except for the first 2 days. And the ratings are judged on Saturday and Sunday, not on Thursday and Friday. The ratings are important on Thursday and Friday. But those are the only times, Tony, where you can dictate, you know, the time that the guys go out and who they play with. So you can put stars with stars. Saturday and Sunday is completely predicated on how the results are from Thursday and Friday. So you can't match that up like you can Sunday Night Football schedule. Like, who's going to open up on Thursday night when they play at Kansas City, the Super Bowl defenders? You can't do that in golf except at the beginning of the tournament as opposed to the last two rounds of the tournament.
Fair point. Somebody asked me the other day if I had heard rumors that Rory was going to go to the Saudi Tour. And I said, I haven't heard anything like that. But if he did, then for me, and I like Rory very much, I would think, wow, this is hypocrisy at its worst level, because he's not a guy who needs money. And I'm just sort of wondering, have you heard anything like that?
Oh, man. Everybody in golf has been talking about that. And it'll be so crazy if that happens. I'm with you. I'm a big Rory fan on and off the golf course. I think he's a fantastic guy. But he has flat out said, here's a soundbite that I promise will be all throughout time if McIlroy does go. I don't think he's going to go. But if he does go, all throughout time, the soundbite that everyone will play is when McIlroy came out and said that if LIV Golf was the only golf professionally played on the planet, or whatever, I'm paraphrasing, he would retire rather than play it. That he hated LIV Golf, he can't stand the format, he can't stand what it's about, and that he would retire before he played LIV Golf. If he goes and takes the money and does it, that would literally be hypocrisy at the highest level. And I think he understands that. I don't think he's going to do it. I really don't. But the rumors are always out there, and he would be one of those guys in that category that you talked about, Tony, that to me, that makes it the most interesting. I mean, how much money does someone need? You know, when you're dealing with people who are making a good living or a great living, that's one thing. When you're dealing with people who are making tens of millions of dollars a year already, all you're doing is padding your bank account. You know, how many houses can you buy? How many cars can you buy? How many people in your family can you take care of? You know, that kind of stuff. And if Rory goes, oof, man, that would be rough. But I don't think he's going to do it, Tony. I really don't.
I loved watching Rory.
But yes, people are talking about it.
Yeah, he rolled up his pants the other day, hit it from the water, went right back down into the water. That was great to watch, actually. So it sort of feels more, and I know this is a really good tournament. This is Arnold Palmer, and people have respect for Arnold Palmer. Even people who didn't know him all around the world have respect for Arnold Palmer. But it does feel more like two separate competing tours again than I thought it would, that meet just in the majors. And now with the invitation to Joaquin Niemann, it sort of feels like tournaments will say, and the Masters is what I'm talking about, obviously, they'll say, look, we're doing what we're doing to get the best golfers. And we're not going to have an orthodoxy about these tours. Am I reading that correctly?
No, I think you're reading that 100% correctly. I totally agree. I was having a conversation with Curtis Strange yesterday over at Bay Hill, and Curtis and I were talking about that very thing. And I think that the major championships, Tony, have an opportunity here to separate themselves from PGA Tour events and live golf events or whatever tour you want to talk about even more, because they have the ability. This isn't their fight, you know. The Live PGA Tour, DP World Tour, the European Tour, that's one separate faction that people are going back and forth on. The four major championships, this is not their fight. They can do as they wish. Remember, we've talked about this over the years. The PGA Tour, Tony, does not govern the four major championships.
That's
the four
right.
major championships right. are governed by entities that are not the PGA Tour. They're co-sanctioned, they work together, but they are not PGA Tour run events. So when the Masters wants to, when Augusta National and the Masters Committee want to invite Joaquin Niemann from Live Golf, they can do that. It's an invitational. They can do whatever they choose. So right now, Live decides to back away from earning world golf ranking points and trying to apply more pressure to get more of its best players to play in the major championships can only enhance the major championships, and it can only, you know, mess up the relationship between Liv and the PGA Tour. But again, that's not Augusta National's fight. They're trying to put on the best Masters possible, and that's why they invited Joaquin Niemann, who has, you know, been a great player the last few years and has been trying really hard to get back into that top 50, which is the cutoff for the Masters. But you can't do that when you're on Liv Golf. They threw a bone to Joaquin Niemann. By the way, he won again. You know, he's won a couple of times already on Liv Golf in 2024. So, yeah, it's a strange time in golf in that regard. But the four major championships, Tony, are sitting pretty. They can bring those guys into the fold if they choose, or they can kind of publicly push them away like the PGA Tour has done. But they're not doing that right now. So it's really interesting to watch.
No. It feels to me like a de facto, and not that it's meant to be this way, but a de facto endorsement of the Saudi Tour to keep it going. Because if there's no penalty at the major level, then why wouldn't you take the money and do it if you were inclined, right?
That's exactly
that's
right. That's what everybody was thinking with Jon Rahm. Like, everybody's like, man, what's Jon Rahm? Like, why is he doing this after saying he hated it so much? Well, first of all, everybody has their price. That's the first thing. He took it because of the money. I'll just admit it. But the other thing is, like you just said, if there's this thought process, and I think there is, that everybody's going to be coming back together anyway, you might as well cash in and then come back in a year or two. But I don't know.
I agree.
To me, the majors are sitting in a very sweet spot, especially Augusta National.
No, it's always good to talk with you. Thank you. I hope you're well. And you get to sleep in your own bed, right? Because it's in Orlando.
Yeah, no two-robe hotel this week, man. We're in that.
No. No. All right. Be good.
Let me
we'll
tell
talk.
You something. Val Sands has no interest in having two robes in our house in the shower. So no.
That's funny. All right, we'll talk soon. Steve Sands, boys and girls. We'll take a break. Chuck Culpepper will join us to talk about witnessing Caitlin Clark when she broke all the records in the history of mankind. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Once again, this is Natalie Gelman, and unless you're Barbara Streisand, she's better than you. But some of the other people, actually, that Michael Granberry has sent us.
Just remarkable. All,
where does he see these people?
He's plugged in.
Just a beautiful, beautiful voice. This is called Heavy, Heavy Heart. Just wonderful. She plays in Chuck Culpepper, and Chuck was in Iowa City. Is it Iowa City where Iowa is? It's not or is it Des Moines? Where were you? It's Iowa City,
Iowa
right?
City. Iowa City. Iowa City, yes.
Okay. So you saw, we could go back and forth on this, the Maravich thing. I think that's fool's gold, you know, comparing women to men on any level, and so I'm not going to make you do anything silly like that. But what was it like? It's her senior night. She's already declared she's not coming back next year. It may be the last game she ever plays in what I think is called Carver Arena. I could be wrong about that. What was it like to be there?
I would say different from maybe anything that I've experienced. And just a long day of that didn't seem long. Of you start at 10 a.m. and she walks out on the court and there's this roar, and because people are already in their seats 2 hours before tip off to watch the game day show.
Like Jeff Pigott was out there.
And what really, I think out of all the details that tell you how large the phenomenon has become, I think for me, the one that struck me the most was spend a life watching college football to see coaches, especially in the Southeast, helped off the field by police officers, you know, two or three officers surrounding them. It's especially in the SEC, it's sort of a mainstay site, you know, of the sport. And then when the ceremony ended, which was post game, and then she did a lot of interviews on the court, talked to a lot of people on the court. Three officers helped her, you know, walk from there through the crowd to the mass of autograph seekers, where she sort of got in the middle and started signing and signing and signing. I was looking at the officers and I was thinking, I wonder what they must be thinking. You know, did they grow up respecting female athletes? Do they have daughters, sisters, whatever, mothers who are athletes, all of that? I had all those thoughts. And so then I called the Iowa City police the next day and they declined interviews. So even her police detail is now declining interviews. It's become so huge.
There is no one my age in America who cares about sports. And I'm not making that as a declarative statement, because there are people my age who do care about sports, but who doesn't immediately think of Bear Bryant. The police escort is Bear Bryant. The college police is always Bear Bryant. It is not Caitlin Clark, but it is Caitlin Clark. I assume that tickets there were going for a lot of money, but part of me thinks, no, they're not, because anybody who had a ticket kept a ticket, right? Went to the game. Was there any sense that they were being scalped for outrageous amounts of money?
Well, there there was a while that game day show was going on, they did a, you know, on the big screen there was a graphic showing $433 as the price, you know, as sort of an elevated price of a ticket to try to get in at that point. During the week, you know, those numbers had bounced around as they do, you know, up there. I guess most of the ones I saw were in that range, you know, which is steep for regular season college basketball, you know, and it's, you know, it was clear in there though that a lot of the fans in there had been there a lot through her career, and that they had sort of this singular experience, this experience that does not come to every town, and here they had it, and they had just absolutely reveled in it.
I would tell people that Chuck has written a wonderful piece about this in the Washington Post, and they should access that, but I'm curious about this, and I don't know if you know this. She previously announced on Friday, she was going to go to the WNBA because we remade the show in order to accommodate that. Why did she announce that beforehand?
I think to make if I don't know that, I don't know that for sure, but I think my sense of it was to get it out of the way for Sunday. It's that kind of thing we're seeing from time to time when something is going to be you know, sort of a big loud event, and you want to have you don't have one detail removed that you don't have to worry about anymore. You're seeing that in different sports.
That makes sense to me. I mean, we all try to figure out, where could she make more money? If money was the goal, where could she make more money? I assumed she could make more money staying in Iowa one more year, because I wasn't sure that all of her NIL deals would go with her to the Indiana Fever. I wonder, did you have any thoughts on that? She's going to make a lot of money regardless. I mean, she's already doing national commercials. Come on, let's not be foolish here. But do you have any sense as to where she could make more money? Because it probably doesn't matter.
Right. I've kind of followed the whole argument over, not argument, but the whole question there, the whole debate over at which station would she make more. And to me, I mean, people make compelling arguments on both sides. I hate to say that, but that's the way it seems to me, is that, you know, you can make that case that staying at Iowa, as big as it's become and as big as these TV ratings are, is the way to go. And I think the TV ratings, to me, whenever I sort of read or listen to these, sound like the thing that people are saying that make the Iowa case.
That's what I would have thought. I had another question, and I've watched her do this. When she's interviewed, she always credits her coaches. She always credits her teammates. She always credits the fans. Does that sound rehearsed to you, or does it feel genuine to you when you see her?
It feels genuine to me, and I think one thing about her is she's worn this stardom really well for somebody who had, you know, she was well known in high school. You know, she didn't know she was going to be this big, but she was a coveted recruit. But this level of stardom is something that I don't think anyone expected, including herself. And she's worn it in a way that has made it seem enjoyable. When, you know, if you go to for example, a restaurant there, they're talking about how, I was talking to someone there about how there's a sort of an unspoken rule in the restaurant of when she comes in with anyone, you know, they just kind of want to let her enjoy herself. And it's that kind of thing. I once heard a story of Patrick Mahomes going in with his wife to a restaurant in Kansas City, and nobody bothered him. So remember, he paid the check for everybody on the way out of appreciation for that. And the idea that kind of thing is going on, and that they have that sense of, you know, she's asked for autographs or photos, whatever, wherever she goes, and we're going to let her have a nice few hours without that, kind of tells how far this fame has come. And so, you know, ESPN's Holly Rowe mentioned this the other day on the court, is that every single time she's interviewed her, and she said, "I feel like I've stalked you across the country, so I feel like I'm, you know, weird for doing that." But every single interview she's done with her starts with the teammates. So, yeah, I think that's something that you've picked out that has really happened.
Yeah, I'm not going to nominate her for sainthood, which is an easy thing to do.
Right.
She's got a big ego. You can see it on the court. She's a chippy player, and she should. I'm good with that. But do you sense any resentment? Angel Reese last year aimed it at her, put her down very specifically with gesture after gesture. Do you see anything like that when you watch her play from opponents?
I didn't a little bit on Sunday, but that was a give and take, that thing with Angel Reese, because Clark gives it out just as well.
Oh, yeah, she does.
And she had this in a way, she sort of embodies how, you know, another generation has come along to not mind that. You know, it's part of the game now in a way that maybe it wasn't in previous generations. And so, yeah, you know, she had that play on Sunday where she sort of sidled up to the McMahon, the Ohio State Big Ten Freshman of the Year last year. And
she drew a technical
into her. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that was, you know.
And then she fell backwards. It was, yeah.
Right,
again,
right.
What I'm saying is that I'm not canonizing her. I'm not, because I see the personality there. But I will say this. She takes a lot of shots. And her team doesn't really care what the other team is doing, because they're not out there to stop the other team. They're going to let the team shoot, get the ball, and shoot themselves. But to me, and again, the Maravich thing, I'm not going there. She's leading the country in points and assists.
Yeah, that assist thing.
Nobody does that. That's unbelievable. Who does that? Tiny Archibald? Will Chamberlain 1 year because he wanted to? No, this can't be done. You can't lead in points and assists when your team needs you to score. Isn't that remarkable?
It is, and she's leading in assists by an average of 1.4 per game over the second place player, who's Georgia Amore at Virginia Tech, who's great, you know. And she's leading by 1.4 assists, a huge gap. And, you know, in some way, those assists are every bit as dazzling as the long shots that's got everybody.
The long passes that she makes, when she dribbles with her head up and sees somebody going and threads it, she's really, I don't know how good she's going to be WNBA. I don't know. She's 6 feet tall. She's not 6'3". I don't know. It's a different game. They're the best of the best. But boy, oh boy, is she great in college, right? She's great.
Yeah. And when you think of that question, how good is she going to be in the WNBA, that thing, the eye that she has for the game, that's what makes me think very good. You know, it's obviously the range is going to be a big help, but that eye for the game and, you know, the assists that come from that, it really makes me think it's going to be great fun there too. Not the same, but fun.
The best woman player I've ever seen is Diana Taurasi. And if Caitlin Clark can be that good, you know, and Caitlin Clark is, you know, looks to be a better passer right now than Taurasi was. And Taurasi was really, really good. Now, Wilbon will tell you it's Cheryl Miller or Candace Parker. And maybe, but I wanted to compare guards to guards, you know, and so that's what I'm looking at. It just the way you wrote about it, it seemed like you were totally taken by it and understood the sort of change in direction of history that is going on here with women's sports. And she's at the middle of it, right?
Right. And thank you for saying that. And I think, you know, two things have struck me in the last 2 years in Australia, last summer, winter there.
Sam Kerr.
The quarterfinal between Australia and France. I was walking to the stadium. And then in Iowa on Sunday, I was walking around the concourse. And those two times have, each of them felt like you couldn't actually tell as you walked along and kind of felt the buzz what the gender of the players you were going to be watching was going to be. That struck me as a real kind of a moment that we've reached where in certain parts of the world, at least, you know, that's possible that you, that people are just as fervent, you know, heading to see female stars as they always have been for male stars.
Yeah, so it was lovely work. Thanks a lot. And thanks for being on as always, Chuck. You know, it's our great pleasure to have you.
Thank you so much, Tony. Thank you.
Chuck Culpepper, boys and girls, we will come back with email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
That's Phil Coleman on the euphonium. I couldn't pick out a euphonium. If you put like a tuba and a euphonium and a xylophone in front of me,
right,
I wouldn't know which was the euphonium, I don't think.
But we love the sound.
It's a great sound.
Yes, thank you,
Phil. Want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad, please?
Yes, Bethesda Bagels. We love them. You will as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in and you will be thrilled.
That'll do it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, try to see it my way. Do I have to keep on talking until I can't go on? While you see it your way, run the risk of knowing that our love may soon be gone. We can work it out. Those are the Beatles. I think that might be from Beatles 65. I'm not certain.
I think you're right.
It's just a great, great song. Thanks to our guests today, Steve Sands, Chuck Culpepper. Thanks as well to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple, please leave us a review. We got a very nice note, Michael, from Jonathan Tannenwald. That we mentioned that he had won an award, and he says the specific honor was making top 10 for national beat writing. I'm not the only little on the list, as Jeff Passan is too. I'm sure you'll recognize other names, including Adam Kilgore and Mark Schlabaugh. Adam Kilgore is with The Post. Mark Schlabaugh is now with ESPN, used to be with The Post. And as ever, you'll see many other names you recognize in other categories, from Barry Zwerluga and Sally Jenkins at The Post to many others across the country. You've known me a long time at this point, and you know how long I've been at this. To be in such company through the APSC, that's the Associated Press Sports Editor, is a neat honor. Isn't that nice, Michael?
That's
nice
best.
From Jonathan. It is.
GDS.
And from
own.
John Hartrick. That's right. He went to GDS. That's right. From
okay.
From John Hartrick in Binghamton. He wanted to let me know, obviously, about the game last night against UMBC, which we won. And so we have the number 5 seed in the tournament. But he also said that recent alum and distance winner Emily McKee, McKay. I'm not sure. It's capital K-I-E. It might be McKay. Anyway, I'm going to get it wrong. But this is not the point, how I pronounce her name. She earned a bronze medal at the World Indoor Track Championships in Glasgow, in Scotland. I watched a lot of that, and I didn't see this race. It's an incredible accomplishment for her and for Binghamton. She was a 5-time All-American who graduated in 2022 and is considered one of the greatest, if not the greatest, athlete to ever compete at Binghamton. Which is really nice. Now, I would say maybe Mickey Greenberg, who was a great basketball player, but you know what? And we've had some people to play in Major League Baseball, but that's to win a bronze at the World Championships is a real big deal. Are you looking at something?
Oh, I was just looking. Yeah, you're the 5 seed and take on UNH.
Yeah, New Hampshire. We're going to beat New Hampshire.
Yeah.
All right. From Mo Connolly about Candy Kitchen. I'll take you watermelon ones. There's a haiku from Shad about the same thing. All is forgiven, even the watermelon for some nonpareils. I should say that the other thing that I bought beyond the nonpareils and the raspberry truffles, I bought like a jelly inside of a rich milk chocolate.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Oh, you didn't like that?
No, I don't like it. And that's my first and last time on that.
You gave me one of those. I thought it was all right.
Yeah. From Chisa Hino, this past week, my husband was telling me about the evils of Swedish fish and other chewy, sticky foods. Well, today in Tokyo, I was eating sushi and lost a filling. This was crab sushi, possibly from Sweden, but more likely from Hokkaido. Nevertheless, it sucked the silver filling in my tooth. Thank goodness we do not have Cigna. We had a good laugh. Poor mom. She's the mom. My daughter, who listens with her dad on the AM commute to school, made me write this. Thank you for writing it.
Yes.
She said, thank you. From Chuck Elias in South Hadley, Massachusetts. Oh, south, not north. I don't know if that's a good climate.
Not sure.
Last week, you read an email from Bill Quinn in Holbrook, New York, who invited you to watch his girls' volleyball team play in a local D.C. tournament. When you read that his team is the Long Island Volleyball Academy, I said, I know that program. If you listen to Chuck and Roxy, episode 52, so glad I made the top 50. That's right. You might remember that I'm a volleyball referee, and I've actually worked Bill's club. Please let Bill know that I said hi, and if he brings his girls to the North Atlantic Championships in May, to listen for a hearty lecheeserie from the referee stand. From DG, my four-month odyssey is over. I'm back home in New Jersey down the shore. I spent 3 months at PGA and a month in California with visits to Sherman Oaks, where my daughter lives, Palm Springs with my kids and grandkids, and Redondo Beach with my brother and cousins for a boys' weekend. Like my grandmother used to say, it's nice to go away, but nicer to get back home. My only problem is when I got home, where I live in the same house as my daughter and son-in-law and grandkids, my son-in-law had changed our cable package from Verizon to a new streaming package that you access through Hulu. This is not an easy transition for me, who is technically challenged. I share that. Truthfully, it took me a few days of frustration, but I think I got it until I don't. Come on, man. You don't do stuff like this to a 75-year-old antique. BG. He's right. From Joe Bianchino in Latham, New York.
We love Joe.
So you've never been to Maine, but you kind of like the music. I hear the ladies are insane, man. And they sure know how to use it. Jeannie hates Three Dog Night.
She really does.
But thank you for that. From Bruce Lorton. So I was listening to the show and having a really good day, but I digress. I attended a parochial school directly across from the Notre Dame campus. Since it was a Catholic school, their relationship with the university allowed my graduating class to have baccalaureate at the Basilica, but at that time it was just Sacred Heart Church, and graduation at the ACC, that's the Athletics Convocation Center, I believe, which has also been renamed. Back to my story, I was listening to you talking with Bob Ryan when you asked him the five greatest sporting events he had attended when he brought up the BC Notre Dame game in 1992. I was also there and ready to give up cheering for my Irish at the start of the fourth quarter when the comeback started, only to see my dreams of a fifth national championship in my lifetime for my beloved Irish disappear on a game-ending field goal. I'd buried that memory for 34 years until Mr. Ryan shattered my day. I guess que sera, sera. I only hope I live long enough for number six. From Gary Van Giesen, I hope I pronounced that correctly. The recent email about the lacrosse player who lost his prosthetic eye during the game reminded me of a story from the great Peter Falk, the famous one-eyed Lieutenant Columbo. It seems he lost the eye at a fairly young age, but it did not prevent him from participating in sports. One time at summer camp, playing third base, he tagged the opposing runner out on a fairly close play, but Peter was quite convinced that the runner was clearly out. Rather than get into an argument that might get him tossed from the game, he simply popped out the fake eye and offered it to the ump and said, here, I think you need this more than I do. The ump and players couldn't help but laugh, but the call stood. That has to be a summer camp memory that everyone involved won't ever forget. Thanks for all the unforgettable stories from this high-quality podcast, and please don't pull a Peter King and retire on us. What would Chuck and Roxy do without you? From Derek in Akron, is the new game counting emails? I got 9. This makes 10. Champion of Akron. How many you got, LeBron? From Paulie Coconuts, when will Wilbonian be added to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary? Oh, sure, it should be.
It should, definitely Wilbonian. Should be.
Should be. From Dean Jansen in Adelaide, in Australia. First time emailer, although I did make the pilgrimage to Chatter way back in 2017. I was just about knocked off my feet this evening as I was wandering around my local grocery store when I noticed a big sign saying new in the freezer. To my amazement, they're stocking Tillamook ice cream with 3 great flavors to choose from. So I purchased a mudslide. Yeah, that's the best.
That's the one?
Yes, mudslide. Got home and immediately tried it. Had to eat it over the sink, naturally, to get to really enjoy it the way it was intended. Much to the chagrin of my partner, was halfway through me trying to explain my action, says, oh, the guy from the yelling show, because I occasionally make her sit through PTI when it airs here during Saturday morning breakfast time. Anyway, you're on to something here. This ice cream ain't bad, but a $10 Australian beans for a small tub may not be high in the rotation. It's actually quite inexpensive in the United States.
In the United States, yeah.
It is. Thanks for all the years of laughs, so that's nice. From Justin Winkleman in Bloomfield Hills in Michigan. If you flush the mouse in Australia or New Zealand, does it go down the toilet in the opposite direction? Asking for a friend. From Brian Martin. Oh, this is Sam the Shams.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Okay. Sam the Sham. And are they with the Shangri-Las?
With the Shamettes, I believe.
The Shamettes. And whatever happened. Oh, so he wants to know, happy 87th birthday, Sam the Sham, vocalist, organist, founder of the Tex-Mex Garage Band. Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs. And whatever happened to Sam? Domingo Samudio, real name, quit the music business and became a deckhand on industrial ships, eventually getting his captain's license to run supply boats. He later moved to Memphis and taught Bible study classes at federal institutions. If that's true, that's completely wild. I heard a great story the other day. I heard a story from a friend of mine, my friend Jody, who one of his patients was a record producer at that period of time, a record producer and songwriter.
Uh-huh.
And one of his credits was Yummy, 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 one of the worst songs of all time. But one night, apparently, Sam the Sham didn't show up for a gig. The Pharaohs were there.
Right.
Sam wasn't there. The owner of the joint was really angry and said to my friend Jody's patient, whose name, of course, I'm blanking on now, but I think it's Bud. I think it's Bud, but I'm blanking on it.
Bud, you better get on stage.
And he did. And he sang the songs, and nobody was the wiser. And nobody was the wiser. Jody will call me later and tell me that I screwed up the name. You know.
That is wild.
You know, so isn't that tremendous? All right, if you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Earl, you run yourself, Earl. You run yourself.
Your finger off
you hit me.
Yeah, because you good. Put your I'm finger on good. Me.
The shadows need the light, and my life needs the pain, 'cause I want you.
Careful what you speculate.